and welcome to the Big Four Transparency Podcast. I'm joined today by a man who needs no introduction, but I will introduce anyways, Jason Statz, the host of Statz Daily and the founder of Realize. Welcome to the pod, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I really appreciate you joining on. I'm going to address the elephant in the room here is hopefully you're not fanning out too hard. I saw you tweet out that this was one of your favorite podcasts lately. And I think I'm still blushing to this day. So, you know, I really appreciate you. I really appreciate you saying that, first of all, and I really appreciate you coming on.
You bet. All good. Yeah.
So to start off, I've obviously been consuming your content for quite a long time, primarily Statz Daily. I find that is just like an incredible resource just for understanding kind of where firms are at, what the questions are. But with a daily cadence, like I'm really curious to know, like, what does your creative process look like, particularly around ideation for that podcast?
I have so many conversations with firm owners that that's generally what's driving new ideas and new talking points. And I don't run a firm anymore. And so there's that sort of limiting belief of, well, you don't run a firm anymore. Are you really going to be able to talk about it confidently? And the reality is, because I don't have a job, I can actually spend a huge amount of time just talking with other people where this is all that they get to do. And to me, the value of that is like sort of breaking down those silos and being able to share across firms what's working and what's not working. So most of ideation is like just a product of building those conversations into my schedule every single week so that I'm always connecting with firm owners.
Interesting. And how did you settle on like a daily cadence? Was it always daily or did you end up moving to that later on?
So it was always daily from the beginning. Not necessarily with the intent that I would literally publish every single day, but there's just always been an abundance to talk about. I did it a few months after selling my firm as a way for like the people that had a big appetite to go deeper to do just that, to go deeper. I think a lot of the content in our space is very surface level and the same concepts rehashed over and over again, but I didn't see people talking about the very nitty gritty aspects of like day to day of running a firm, like the smaller, more technical things that the content that your software vendors are putting out isn't going to dig into. And those were the reality of my day to day running a firm was like, it was very tactical, like kind of small fiddly little things. So it was really more just to dig into that and also give a place where people who wanted more content could go deeper. Definitely not for everybody. Like there's not many people in my life that I would want to hear from every single day, but was a way for the folks who did to be able to go deeper.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's nice too, where once you have this form, like this level of library behind you, like if I'm curious about a topic, you've probably spoken about it too, right? So even if people aren't looking for a daily podcast, they can probably actually tune in for like very good like insights on this one topic that is probably too in the weeds for most other places to have covered. So,
yeah. So this was all stuff that when I was running a firm, I was trying to find answers to, and they just didn't exist. So like building that library that is a resource to the next generation of firm owners and how they navigate like blockers with legacy firm ownership and just all these little aspects that make being an accountant challenging. Yeah, just trying to like lay down that breadcrumb trail that would have been really helpful to me.
Yeah, I love that. And despite all the content I've consumed about you, I haven't heard a ton about, you know, your origin story. So I'm kind of curious, the firm that you ended up selling, you were not the founder of. And so I'm very curious kind of how that journey played out. And, you know, a little bit of the behind the scenes on that.
Yeah, it was an 80-year-old tax firm and like had all the trappings you would expect, like full hourly billing, partners that were, you know, somebody's grandpa. Like it was exactly what you would think when your mind thinks of what an old firm like that looks like. I put in, I think, 8 years there before eventually buying out a couple of the partners. And then I owned it with a partner. And it eventually got to the point where I realized my strengths were going to be more around like strategy for the firm as a whole and talent acquisition and positioning and that sort of thing. Almost out of necessity because I wasn't very good at actually doing the work. But that was what I learned I enjoyed the most, and like people development. And those were all the things that were bottlenecks for our firm, is finding the next person and retaining talent. And so that was only realistic for me to be able to double down on that if I own the firm. And where I was at, which isn't where everybody, I don't know, not everyone's going to be wired this way, but I got to the point where I'm no longer willing to build cool stuff for somebody else. I've already built a bunch of cool stuff that I'm now going to have to go back and buy. And so going forward, like if I'm going to make cool stuff, it's going to be stuff that I own. And it was kind of at this, I don't know, turning point in my career where I was like, am I going to go do something else? Am I going to keep doing this? Eventually I bought out a couple of the partners and tried to steer that ship in a way that was hopefully ever so slightly better than it was before.
Nice. I love that. For partner buyouts, you don't hear about that a lot. Like, I'm curious what that looks like. Are valuations on that kind of similar to if you were buying a firm, or are they a little bit different? And I'm kind of curious how you even approach those discussions.
It's funny. This firm actually had a very nailed down process for how it had been done for the last like 60 years. And okay, that was good in some ways, bad in other ways. Like, part of the agreement was, if you want to exit before you're 65, you just walk away from your equity, because this was written in an age when, like that was the norm, and you go into business ownership and you're going to be there until you are old and honestly probably shouldn't be doing, accounting work anymore. But
interesting,
there were all these different things. Obviously that wasn't going to be the deal for me. So we kind of had to figure something else out. But this firm, which I think there's actually some smart aspects of it to draw from. They basically had a discounted, way of people buying in, but then there was a pretty big earn in component with like some restrictions so that it wasn't hugely cost prohibitive for people. And it was actually a great approach, I think, if you're trying to build something that like has decades long relevance. There were definitely some things in there that don't hold up current day. But yeah, in our case, it was basically like a discounted approach that wasn't too different than what you would get from a third party sale. There's a different set of challenges when it's internal, and you still have some of those same issues of you gotta get really explicit about when the old people are going out and like what the rules around that are and whether you have clawbacks. And another challenge with internal buyouts is if that person goes out and builds something new. So in my case, I built a cast practice from scratch. It had just been a tax firm for the longest time. Built a $1.5 million cast practice from scratch before buying in. So then what does that look like? Do you go buy all the stuff that you just built? And like, how do you make that fair for everyone? So it was basically, yeah, it was a discounted version of what you would expect from a third party sale with quite a bit of nuance sprinkled in.
Okay, interesting. And why CAS practice? Like, why was that something you had built? Because I feel like CAS is really having a moment right now as well. Like I've just been kind of flooded with requests from people saying like, hey, please like include this as a field in Big Four Transparency, because I'm having to like piece bits together. And so I did that about a month ago, but I noticed like out of the blue, it seemed like for 3 months, all I was hearing was CAS, CAS, CAS. So I'm curious why that's what you kind of decided to build internally.
It's a really hard thing for it's a hard thing for us to build, let alone for our clients to build. We think it's hard to find accountants. Small business clients, mid-sized businesses, like, boy, they're having a heck of a time finding accountants too. But just how accounting, the back office increasingly is like a sort of tech platform. Like there's so many moving pieces there that nobody's going to do that for the first time and get it right. I mean, we have a hard enough time where we support, and we had something like 800 business clients. It's hard enough for us to come in and build something that works together nicely. You can hardly expect a business owner with no expertise to be able to do that. So the result was it could actually be extremely profitable if you put it alongside what they were capable of doing in-house. So those engagements, the way they usually started was they have a few people on the accounting team and we can come in and get some quick wins for them. The client already has in their head a notion of what it should cost to get the accounting problem done, but with better systems, I mean, we can cut that way down. But what is it? The Walmart guys quote, "Your margin is my opportunity." Like it's a degree of that where they're used to this big inefficient machine and we can come in and charge top dollar for it because it's something that's been really expensive for them in the past. And the way things are trending, the tech keeps getting better. The people keep getting more scarce. And so the value of that keeps going up. It's just like the way everything's trending, it seems like that's something that just gets more valuable and more automatable down the road.
Okay. That's super interesting. And while you were building that, did you have like, you know, inspirations or people that you really followed or went to for kind of advice or tactical insights? Because a lot of the people I asked today point to you. And so I'm really curious kind of what you were looking at before Realize existed.
Man, there wasn't much. Like internet think boy culture a few years ago, 5-7 years ago, was not what it is now, where everybody's getting into the game, which is good because like there's such an appetite for education. Lozanis, Ryan Lozanis was doing some stuff. You had like your Ron Bakers of the world that were talking value pricing, but honestly, not much. What I found, like going to my first accounting conference, just like kind of expanded my universe in a way that like immediately changed everything. And going to a conference and seeing smart speakers, all that's great. But what I learned was actually who I really wanted to talk to were all the other people there who are like me, who are in my circumstances, and I could learn from what was working and what wasn't working from them. Like, I, in my opinion, you can keep 80% of your gurus. Like, still the most useful room for me is the room of people still in my business now, is the room of people who do what I do. And just being able to share that experience. You know, we all get home. No, we all. I get home at the end of the day and my wife's like, you're doing great. You're so good at this stuff. Great job. And I'm like, thanks. But like, does she really know if I'm any good at this stuff or not? She doesn't. But like, I appreciate the support. But at the end of the day, she has no idea. But to then like sit in a room with the people who have a very intimate understanding of everything that you're going through and they're going through the same thing, that's just so energizing and genuinely shaves like years off of your learning process, whether you are a firm owner or an accountant at a big firm or a manager, whatever it is. That was super powerful for me. So I leveraged that kind of in lieu of think boy culture. And I still think that ought to be part of every accountant's sort of like growth plan, is how do I network with a bunch of people who are in a similar spot to myself.
I love it. As a new think boy myself, the thread emojis meteoric rise like needs to be studied, you know. Awesome. I love that. And so you talked about conferences. I have my first accounting conference coming up. Actually, I'm going to Bridging the Gap soon. I'm pumped about it. When I was in accounting, I never got brought to the technical conferences because I think I was very much pegged as like, this guy will do business development for us. So I got brought to other random conferences.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to my first kind of accounting conference, but I'm curious kind of like what your advice is for people who want to have that experience you had. Like, what should you be doing? What should you be thinking about to make the most out of a conference?
My favorite conferences are always the ones that are the best hangs, where the people like me are hanging out. If you've already been hanging out online, odds are you already know some people that are going to be there. And if possible, it's good to make contact with those folks beforehand to be like, hey, let's make sure to connect while we're there, because it'll be a whirlwind and you'll be bummed if it doesn't happen. The first one's always the hardest because you haven't made all those relationships yet. After that, it's like a family reunion. It's like you got your people, your squad that you hang with. And so it's much like, for most accountants, it is an emotionally taxing thing to go into an environment like that with a bunch of people they don't know. So it gets better, but if you're gonna hit one, go to the one where there's gonna be the folks that you enjoy hanging with, which frankly, oftentimes isn't the nitty gritty technical ones. Like, we love to focus on technical development when most of our blockers have nothing to do with the technical stuff. It's the other things. Mm-hmm. But I look for the ones where the fun people are going to be hanging out.
Nice. And at what point during the conference do you hit that bad angle selfie for all social media? Is that a start of the conference thing or halfway through?
That's a start of the day when my face is at its puffiest. So usually in the hotel, you try to get, like the up chin, the worst possible angle that you can, just so that when people do see you in the wild, they're like, wow, this is actually exceeding expectations.
Oh, I see that. That's good. That's good. Yeah. Good tactic for all involved. Nice. And on the topic of conferences, I'm curious. I mean, everyone has a different purpose for going to a conference. For, just that person who's trying to find their way in the world of accounting, like, they want to figure out what they like, what's going to really make this profession work for them. What conference would you recommend for them?
Good question. I can speak to my own experience. You know, the things that I was really cranking on at, the last 5 years of running a firm was building that CAS practice. And so for me, it was very tech driven, very, somewhat bookkeeping driven. So for me, that was QuickBooks Connect. That was ZeroCon. They were putting on the best ecosystem shows where you would get to meet the tech vendors, find some new cool stuff. And that was just where the people running those accounting practices were hanging out. Scaling New Heights as well, to a degree. Yeah, I would say it probably depends on either the type of firm that you run or the type of work that you do. Another thing to look out for is the exhibit hall. A huge part of the value of conferences to me are who are the exhibitors that are there. And that's actually also a good signal of how progressive a given conference is. If the programming isn't very progressive, it doesn't attract sponsors who are like, yeah, we'll actually find progressive accountants here. So getting a peek at who's going to be there exhibiting is also a good signal.
Interesting. I like that.
AKA, and yeah, recently, don't go to a Thomson Reuters conference.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, if it's software that everyone's working on making obsolete and frustrated with, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, let's throw to the Thomson Reuters ad read now.
Okay, and then on the flip side, the person who is a vendor, sort of like myself, but like I'm just looking to make like good relationships, see who's like cool in the industry. Like, I'm really interested in like the people who are going to be there and like who I can form relationships with. I'm curious what conferences you might recommend for that.
Probably depends on the type of people you're trying to find.
Yeah.
And probably follows kind of the same trend. Like, if you're looking for accountants, bookkeepers, that sort of thing, look for the accounting bookkeeping conferences. If you're looking for tax folks, follow the kind of the bigger industry tax shows. And I do think one thing exhibitors get wrong is they're like, well, I'm only going to go if I can buy a booth, when that totally misses the point. Like, the whole accounting space is about relationships and just getting to know people. And it's most important that you're just there. So if you have the option of exhibiting at one or just turning up as an attendee to three, turn up to three. You're going to learn a bunch about the conferences and the process and just meet people. Don't be like slimy about it. Like, there's definitely good and bad ways to turn up and like shill your wares. But it's mainly about, how do I learn more about like the problems these people have so that I can support them in whatever way I can?
Yeah. Yeah. Relationship building has really, like, it's become really, really obvious that that's the way to do sales. People tweet very angrily about kind of cold outreach to them and stuff like that, because I think a lot of people, first of all, aren't doing the research and they're just like, they're pitching whoever on whatever, right? And I have really found that like not selling has kind of been the best way to sell, has sort of been what I've realized.
Yeah, accountants will punish you more than the average buyer, I think, if you come across as tone deaf. These days, like nobody likes being sold to anyways. So yeah, just finding a not slimy way to do it.
Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit, for more kind of general industry talk, I'm curious, what are you most excited about for the accounting industry?
Small boutique firms working for rad clients, creating a killer place to work.
Yeah, I agree. I think that very soon being non-PE backed will be like a huge competitive advantage. And I think it'll play out in an interesting way where like it will be just, yeah, not being able to find talent, and top talent will all funnel out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm an ignorant internet think boy, but to me, PE money is almost like the death rattle of an accounting firm that can't generate its own cash. The fact that like everything is getting more contextual. So not only in the types of clients that firms serve, but in the type of accountant they are a great person for. Like, mm-hmm. That's a two-sided thing. Like, you're not going to build an accounting firm that is great for every type of accountant to come work for. So firms are like starting to latch on to specializing on the client side a little more because it's just a more profitable way to run a practice. But the same thing applies to the type of people that come and work in your firm. Like, if I want to make a rad firm for, you know, moms who are at home with their kids, like there's so many different versions of this. Mm-hmm. And we've got legacy accounting running people out of the profession every day, legacy leakage, as I like to call it. And it's just because they haven't found the right firm for them yet. Like there's so many cool small firms and bigger firms, I'm sure. But so many cool firms that are creating an awesome place to work that's incredibly flexible, where you'll feel valued and be well compensated. And I think a lot of the misnomers about small firms we've also kind of overcome, like the lack of resources, not being able to make as much money and all these things. But like it can't come soon enough, because honestly, this profession is a crap job for 95% of people. It really is. Like, we're lying to ourselves if we don't think that. And I find that as my content attracts progressive firms, 95% of the accountants that it attracts are like, man, this sounds good, but this ain't my reality. Like, it's like not at all. Like, they're stuck in kind of that legacy model. So the more we can talk about just the better ways to do this stuff and create good places for folks to work, like it solves all that stuff. People leaving the profession, the pipeline problem, all of it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the answer is for like those small but awesome to work at places to kind of get the word out of, like, you know, particularly to talent of like, hey, like this is actually probably where you want to be. And it depends on your goals. Like for some people, the big four is honestly like the place for them to be. But for a lot of people who are leaving that and are discouraged and think that that's all there is for them, like how do these small places like properly get the word out?
Brandon Hall doesn't have a hiring problem. You know, not everybody's Brandon Hall, but like it's just a product of being visible. Like you think about all the internet has changed. Professional services firms largely operate the exact same that they did before the internet, which is just mind-blowing to think about. The fact that you and I could post something that millions of people can see, there's like this element of serendipity that we're not willing to trust because accountants are such ROI-focused creatures.
Yeah,
it all just comes down to being visible. Like, well, I didn't have problems hiring in my firm at the end because I could post a tweet and I'd get, you know, 10 or 15 DMs of really good people and we could hire from there. So like not everybody's going to be, or even wants to be a think boy, an internet celebrity or something like that. But there's sometimes those people actually scare us away from doing our own version of that, which is something more humble and simple and not that level of effort. So if nobody hears about you, if you're not like investing the time to be visible and be out there, then yeah, nobody's going to see you. But reality is we all have access to the same platforms these days. Like it's It's still far from a meritocracy, but it's a whole lot better than anything we've ever had before.
Yeah. So come be guests on our podcast. No, but I do think that that's really true. And I think part of the challenge with that might be like the Venn diagram between people who make it a couple of years down the road into accounting and people who are destined to be content creators is probably relatively small. And that's for sure an overgeneralization, but I think that's why like we see people who can do both are just crushing it to the extent that they are, right? Like, yeah. I think that is unfortunately like a very small population of people.
Yeah. Can I tear that thing you just said to shreds?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. So the fact that we call them influencers or the fact that we call them content creators puts them on a pedestal to give us permission to say, I'm not that, right? Hmm. I don't look at Kim Kardashian and think, there it is. That's what I want to be. I've finally found it. In my opinion, social media and like online communities and all of that, like that is just part of being like a professional these days. I think the more we build it up to say like it's their job or it's the marketing team's job, we miss the opportunity because it's genuinely like we try to control as much as we can. And so we will that future timeline into existence by planning it all out, right? Mm-hmm. There is no aspect of my life that I would have said 5 years ago was like, okay, yep, I'm going to do A and then I'm going to do B and then I'm going to do C and then I'm going to be there. And the more we can divorce ourselves from that need of being able to like will every little step into existence, the more we can lean into the fact that the world is way bigger than we have like control of. And our access to that is social media. And it doesn't mean that you have to have anything novel to say or have a fancy editor or anything like that. It's literally just about sharing your journey and sharing the things that you needed to hear like 2 years ago, you know, like that's what's useful. We're not all going to be James Clear, Tim Ferriss, you know, whatever, Brené Brown, like we're not all going to be these kind of epic thought leaders. But I actually heard this framing from Dickie Bush the other day. It's really good. Everybody needs to hear from the folks that are like two steps ahead of them. Like when they're too far ahead, they're out of touch. So the second grader is most impressed with the fourth grader. They're not impressed with the eighth grader because like they can't even get their head around what, that reality looks like. And so everybody has something to share. Everybody has something they can teach someone. And the product of like consistently being out there and visible enables a whole bunch of opportunities that we could not otherwise ourselves will into existence. And until you lean into like trusting that, then kind of nobody ever sees you and you're stuck on the path that you're on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think like for people who are in the process too, like you actually have a bit of an advantage in terms of like creating that content and kind of like helping people like, you know, helping people who are those two steps behind you because you can position yourself as, I think this is like a Sean Puri thing from another podcast I'm really into, but it's like you can either position yourself as the expert and then if you make a mistake, you're going to be torn to shreds. Yeah. Or you can position yourself as like the curious novice and say, hey, I'm going to learn all about this and I want you to come along with me. And if you are the person who's in that process, who is that two steps ahead, like you get the benefit of being that second person, right? Which I think is a lot easier. And people want to help you and not instead just poke holes in everything you're saying.
And along the way, other people see you, you're exposed to folks that you wouldn't otherwise meet. And like the world is just like bigger than we can comprehend.
Yeah. 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 I love that. One of the questions I've been kind of dying to ask you about, you know, having built a firm, having built like a SaaS practice, what do you think are like some of the key differences between the two that you should consider if like you're a very entrepreneurial CPA and you're trying to decide what's next, right? Like, should I launch myself into this firm or should I pursue building kind of more what's, you know, been hot for the last little while, which would be like a SaaS practice or a SaaS business?
Yeah. As soon as you step outside of firm stuff, you realize how like the fundamental limitations of a service business and how it just has a very linear level of scale that doesn't apply to many other types of businesses.
Yeah.
But I will say one thing that, the way things are trending is people will buy on trust, and SaaS is becoming increasingly saturated where overnight somebody will spin up a landing page that looks just like the other one. You don't really know the difference. Development software dev is becoming commoditized. It's easier than ever, lower cost than ever. So when everything is saturated, we've already seen this on social media, when there's just an abundance of content and information, and you can go anywhere you want to go to get an answer, mm-hmm. Whatever answer you want. The same thing's going to be true with software, if it isn't already. Like you can, and with AI, you may literally be able to imagine your own software, you know, pretty soon, and it just kind of makes itself. So in that reality, how do people make buying decisions? Like, they will follow trust. Like, if they have a relationship with you and you say, like, this is the best way to get this done, that's how they make buying decisions. So yeah, on the pure product side, there are definitely higher leverage businesses to run than a firm, which is fundamentally a service business. But it's also a great opportunity for firms to augment what they do with something more akin to a product business. So if you're getting specific about the type of client that you serve and they all have a common pain, standing up an adjacent business that isn't subject to some of the same constraints of a service business to support those clients, like, that's actually a really powerful combination where you have both the relationship and a more scalable offering. I talk about this a lot in kind of what the future of firm running looks like. You're either going to refer your clients to somebody else's dog food, or you're going to start selling your own. And I think there's a hybrid approach there that's really interesting.
Yeah. From a purely, like, you know, FP&A business standpoint too, like, your firm is a cash flowing business and your software development or product will be a, you know, cash negative business, which then has the larger upside. So it's interesting, yeah. Like, if you can get one to finance the other, for sure. But that, you know, it's a little bit tricky to do, for sure.
And you do one lap of an expo hall in any trade show anywhere, and you see just how out of touch many of the software people are, where you have such a deeper understanding of the problem than most of the people in the space making the tools for them. And you're like, I mean, there's so many times where I have a conversation and I'm like, why am I not doing this myself? So at a certain point, you get over that and you're like, well, I've got 20 people that I know would be customers day one. I've got an extremely intimate understanding of the problem. Like, that's a massive competitive advantage compared to some random developer that wants to spin this up. So you're like, you're in a great spot to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that that's like an incredible thing to consider. And I think a lot of people kind of put these like self-limiting beliefs up of like, oh, well, I'm not like a product builder. You know, I still say that to people to this day. And I'm like, yeah, 250,000 people have used Big4 Transparency, but like, yeah. I don't know how to build a product. I don't know how to code. Like, I just use stuff to throw it together. Right. But like, because I had such a deep understanding of the need, and like, this was my own need as well. You end up building stuff that people want by, you know, just by definition, because you are the people at that point.
Yeah. That's why you can do it well. And everything else around that is getting cheap. Software development's getting cheap, like, content's getting easier to put out and all of that. At the end, what matters is like the understanding that you have. Like, that's the hard part to replicate.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I had kind of one last question I wanted to make sure I asked you. If you were a young accounting professional or person considering entering accounting today, what is kind of your advice to that person to just make sure that you're making the most out of, you know, the situation that you're in right now, where you have quite a bit of leverage, you are like a very hot asset to these firms, but at the same time, you want to, you know, make the profession work for you. Like, we've seen people who have like this wonderful life thanks to accounting, and meanwhile, so many other people feel like they're kind of just butting their heads against the wall. What do you think is like the difference between those people? What's your advice to be the, you know, the person who's making the best of it?
Consider if your boss's job is a job that you want to have, or if they have all the same problems that you do, only worse, because the pay bump doesn't cover up all those problems. In most cases, like, the partner, like whatever that end goal is, like they're sweating every bit as much as you are. And that just like to get there and be like, oh, so I have the same kind of awful lifestyle. I just make more money. Like that doesn't solve those problems. It's really valuable to get exposed to as many things as possible because you don't know what you're going to enjoy until you do it. So if there's a way to get exposed to more than just like, you know, pumping 3 or 4 years into audit or something like that, like find a way where you can see into different things to know what you like. Different stuff's going to stick with different people. But then don't get so sucked into the default path, like the default path being just playing the game that everybody around me says is like, you know, the game I need to be playing, the success as defined by all the people around me. Don't get so sucked into the default path that you lose perspective of the whole rest of the world and cool things that other people are doing. Maybe on your first try, you landed on the very best possible thing in the universe for you, but that seems exceptionally unlikely to me. So like being visible, being out there, finding other people to do what you do, it opens your mind to everything that the industry has to offer and the way that other firms are doing the same thing. It'll make you better at your job, like your current role, but will also give you a more healthy balance. When the opposite is just like going heads down for a decade and getting to the end and being like, why the hell did I just do that? Right. Yeah. That was something that's probably the biggest mistake that I made was, and we probably all make it early on, is just getting so sucked into the game that everybody around you tells to play that you just lose all perspective.
I love that. That's incredible advice. I think for a few years I was like that too, right? Where it's like, hey, if I leave here before being a partner, like I have failed.
Right.
Which again, now looking back and in talking to all the people who have left that, you know, that track and started their own practices because they looked up and realized like, this is not a lifestyle I want. Yeah. So yeah, you definitely don't want to be 10 years down the road and realize you've been working towards something you don't want. And if you did, you know what? It's not all a waste. There are other opportunities for you out there. Absolutely. Like there's no need to be totally down and out and discouraged, but the sooner you can put your head up and actually take a look at that, the better. I think that's incredible advice.
That's another thing people do is they think they're too far down the line. They're like, oh, I'm going to be throwing this all out. Like you're not. As much as I hate to like quote a Gary Vee reel that I saw recently, and how awfully on the nose that is. There's a lady that walked up to him. She's like, I'm 50 years old and I'm starting over from scratch. Like, what's your advice? And he's like, man, you're halfway there. Like you've got so much left to go. And I'll hear from people that are like younger than me. I'm 35. And they're like, no. Like I'm 10 years into this game, man. It's too late to pull the ripcord or go and change to do something else. Like, oh my gosh, no, it isn't. Like you've got so much more time to find something that you love. I think that is a big time self-limiting belief.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for the parting words of wisdom, Jason. I really appreciate it. I've been following you for a long time. You've been, you know, a major inspiration of just trying to sort of build things in the accounting space and, you know, just be authentic and have those conversations. So it's really awesome having you on. I really, really appreciate you taking the time.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye.